hush a vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together at the rising of the moon. And come tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, at the old spot by the river, quite well known to you and me. One more word for signal token, whistle out the marching tune, with your pike upon your shoulder, at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder, at the rising of the moon.
Hello, my name is Harold Covington, and I'm the public spokesman for the Northwest Front. The Northwest Front is a movement to establish a sovereign and independent homeland for all white people here in the Pacific Northwest. The white race in North America is in danger of literal physical extinction. If current destructive demographic trends continue, white people will be a minority in the United States and Canada by the year 2050, and we will have vanished completely from North America by 2100. The real point of no return, however, is far nearer in time. By the year 2030, the median age of the white population of North America will have become so high that we will no longer be capable of reproducing ourselves in sufficient numbers to overcome the tide of mud-colored third-world immigration. Radical dangers require radical solutions. We as a people have wasted the past 6 decades on pointless, futile, and impotent right-wing and kosher conservative organizations and strategies. The overwhelming majority of these past organizations and movements refused to recognize the vital central importance of race in all issues, and they refused to recognize the urgent need for state power in order to preserve the existence of our race. The result of the past 60 years of right-wing failure and impotence is that we are now out of time. There is only one strategy remaining to us that may be able to secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. Our last remaining hope to stave off extinction is the establishment of a sovereign and independent nation on the continent of North America for white people only. Considerations of demographics, economics, and a history of commitment and martyrdom in the persons of Bob Matthews, Sam and Vicki Weaver, and Richard Butler dictate that the territory for this sovereign white republic must lie in the Pacific Northwest. The first step towards the establishment of the Northwest American Republic is a mass migration of the existing racially aware white community to the states of Idaho, Oregon, Washington, and the western part of Montana. It is a matter of the utmost urgency that you make this vitally important commitment to the future of our people, that you do so now, and that you come to the Northwest homeland with only the minimum delay necessary to raise sufficient funds and put your affairs in order. Now, the fact that you've contacted the Northwest Front and gotten hold of this CD indicates that you probably already have at least some idea as to what we're about, but I'll do what I can to tell you about us in the short time available here. Along with the CD, you should have received some other stuff, specifically a copy of the Northwest Front Party Manual, which is called the White Book, and some other literature. If you didn't get this stuff, go to www.northwestfront.org and contact us through the site, and we'll get that material to you. In that Party Manual is a recommended reading list of books on all kinds of subjects, race and political science and communism, and the Jewish question. And there is also a section explaining to you about the 5 Northwest Independence novels. Now, the fact is that in order to fully understand what I'm saying here, and in order to ask the right questions and get the right answers, you need to be familiar with a whole body of knowledge that white Americans are usually denied access to by the media and the public education system. The NF is in a kind of unfortunate position in that in order to bring you fully up to speed on everything we're saying and convince you of the fact that we're right, and we are right, by the way, you have to sit down and read at least 1 or 2 big, thick books, and that's a problem in 21st century America. Now, a lot of us, especially younger white people who were trapped in public schools as children and whose parents couldn't afford to give them an actual education in a private school, no longer have the ability, the concentration, or the basic literacy to read a long block of text for content. There's an old saying that racial integration is kind of like mixing manure and ice cream. It does wonders for the manure, but it doesn't do much for the ice cream. White people, especially younger white people, have been dragged down to the lowest common denominator, and basically nothing is being taught in public schools these days which the black kids can't wrap their minds around, and that means that, frankly, not a lot's being taught in public schools these days. White kids have basically been dragged down to their level. White people are kind of regressing into the past, before reading and writing was invented, and now we're reliant once again on pictures, on electronic screens, or in so-called graphic novels, kind of like our ancestors who drew pictures on cave walls. The party is trying to adapt to audio and visual means of communication, hence our YouTube videos and things like the CD. Now, we also have a weekly podcast called Radio Free Northwest, which can be downloaded from northwestfront.org every week. But the fact is that the bulk of the knowledge that you need to know, and which I need to try and make you understand, is contained in actual physical books of the kind that you hold in your hand. You're really going to need to read those books, especially the Northwest Independence novels. A simple fact is that in the 45 minutes or so I've got here, I just can't give you guys who are new to all this a complete racial education from beginning to end. Those Northwest novels especially are important. They were written with the specific intention of answering every question that anybody might come up with in as much detail as possible. And it's really hard for me to discuss detailed answers to questions with people who haven't read those five Northwest novels, because the answers you're looking for are almost all in there, spelled out in much greater specific detail than I could ever give you in 25 words or less. Okay, I don't want you new folks getting bored and turned off by the droning sound of my voice, so here's a music break. Next question. Why do I use forbidden words on here, specifically nigger and kike and faggot and so on? And don't I think I would attract a better class of people if I used all the usual polite circumlocutions? Okay, I went over this one just a couple of weeks ago, but this is a very commonly asked question, and the answer is important in a spiritual sense, so I'm going to have another go at it. And I apologize to those of you to whom this will be old hat. Now, before I get into it, I want to take time out and urge all of you that if any of you out there have not read George Orwell's historic novel 1984, I urge you to obtain a copy and do so immediately. I myself try to reread this book at least once a year. I've probably read it more often than Mein Kampf and White Power combined. Even though it was written in 1948, and even though it describes an older, Stalinist form of tyranny, Orwell's novel explains almost everything you always wanted to know about the world we live in today, but didn't know who to ask. When you get your copy, I recommend that you start with the appendix at the end of the book, which discusses something called Newspeak. Now, this is, in my opinion, probably the most brilliant and insightful part of the novel. It's an essay on the use and perversion of language in order to control thought, and it's even more applicable today than it was 60 years ago when it was first written. Now, this, in essence, is the secret of the Jewish control of our lives. They are able to dictate what we think and control what we believe because they select the parameters of discussion and thought, and they decide what ideas and what thoughts are acceptable and what isn't. The people who rule us don't give a rat's ass about the poor offended feelings of blacks or spics or even Jews and bugger boys. That's not the reason these words are forbidden. What the ruling class wants to do is to control our very thoughts by making us afraid to speak certain words out loud for fear of economic retaliation and, in Europe, legal punishment, or in this country, fear of psychotic violence from non-whites. Our masters want us so afraid to speak these words that we censor our own selves so effectively that we don't even think these words or think about the concepts and ideas of racial difference and white superiority that those words convey. Our masters don't only want us afraid to say nigger, they don't want us even to think nigger or to be able to think it. The wealthy liberals and Jews who rule us don't want white people to think any thought that contradicts what we're taught in our politically correct classrooms or by our left-wing Zionist state media. They don't want white people even to have in their minds words that can even so much as formulate forbidden thoughts, never mind express them. The long-term goal, as stated in Orwell's 1984, is to make so-called thought crime impossible because we will lack even the language necessary to formulate forbidden thoughts in our minds. Now, this is the reason that I use words like nigger and kike and beaner and faggot, because our slave masters don't want me to, and whatever the regime wants white people not to do, we're under a moral obligation to do as often as possible. White people have to break out of this mental straitjacket and recover our freedom of speech and thought, and that first and foremost represents the freedom to say nigger and kike and faggot. Because, you see, that's exactly what these people are. There is no such thing as an African-American. There is no such thing as a black person. The term person implies an equality with white people which does not, in fact, exist in the real world. They are not people, at least not in the same sense that we are. They're niggers. There is no such thing as a gay person. There is nothing gay about filthy and unsanitary perversions that spread loathsome diseases. The word homosexual is simply a descriptive term for certain unnatural sexual acts. It does not describe the people who commit those acts. Those people are faggots, queers, bugger boys, dykes. To refer to these people without any negative connotation is to imply that they and their perversions are somehow acceptable in civilized society, and they're not. White people and the defenders of Western civilization have to stop letting the enemy define the parameters of discussion and determine what is and is not acceptable by way of thought and language. We need to force that power out of their hands and back into ours. Preferably with a good sharp crack in the skull from a baseball bat. Now that's another thing we need to be free to at least think. We need to be able to encompass in our imaginations the concept of liberals and Jews being forced to do things that we want them to do. We need to envision them being compelled to change their behavior. We need to see them in our mind's eye being punished for what they have done in the past, and I don't mean by being scolded on blogs. The thought is father to the deed, as liberals know full well. If we are free to think disrespectfully of minorities and perverts and the system itself, then it's only a matter of time before we start thinking about doing something about them and bringing about genuine change and breaking out of the forced respect and subservience which democracy imposes on us. And that's what they're really terrified of. There is nothing that frightens a Jew or a liberal more than a white man whose mind is not under control. This is Narben der Gewalt. No relation, presumably, to Oi Gewalt.
This week, I want to talk about naysays, objections that people come up with that explain to us in great detail why we can't possibly come to the Northwest and we can't possibly ever have a white homeland here. Oh, no, 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 no. It's just out of the question. Now, one of the big naysays that we get quite often is the Northwest is full of liberals. It's the most liberal place in the country. It's all blue states and all faggots and hippy-dippy, blah, 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 blah. I'm sure you get the idea. Okay, there is a little something to that, granted. Now, Washington and Oregon are blue states, yes. Idaho and Montana, on the other hand, are red states, if that means anything, whatever you may think that whole blue state red state thing means. It's really not that good of a way to define the character of an area, but Anyway, that's what the case is. We do have Democrat governors in Washington and Oregon, including a Democrat governor in Washington who seems to have finagled her way into office in a rather underhand manner, but we won't get into that. Anyway, the reason that Oregon and Washington are such blue states is because of two things, Portland and Seattle. Living in Washington or Oregon is about like living in New York or maybe downstate Illinois. You've got large rural areas full of white people that are completely overshadowed by huge cities that are full of minorities, full of liberals, full of Democrats, full of faggots, full of every type of garbage that's messed up the country. And because there are so many of them, in essence, the whole political system under liberal democracy becomes top-heavy, and these huge cities exert an inordinate influence on the rest of the state. The fact is that most of the people of Washington and Oregon are perfectly normal, conservative, white people. I have seen more rifle racks on pickup trucks in rural counties in Washington almost than I have in some parts of the South. I've even seen Confederate flags in rural parts of the Northwest, and that's quite a trick since Oregon was a Union state during the war. But anyway, I'm starting to ramble again. The point is, these huge cities, full of minorities, full of leftists, full of hippy-dippy weirdos, full of Democrats, have skewed the political and social ambiance atmosphere in two of these states. It is true that most of these liberals and minorities are concentrated along what we call the I-5 corridor, the Interstate 5 that goes from California on up to Canada. The cities that you will find along the I-5 corridor, Portland, Eugene, which is a university town, Olympia, Seattle, so forth and so on, yes, they're pretty liberal, they're pretty blue, because, again, I say of the large preponderance of numbers of blacks, Mexicans, weirdos, faggots, blah, 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 blah. But outside the I-5 corridor, and maybe one or two other smaller pockets like Spokane, not even Boise, I don't think this applies to, but outside of these huge cities on the coast, the inhabitants of the Northwest are white. They are very conservative, both socially and politically. And they are very likely, when the time comes, to support the creation of a homeland, because like all white people everywhere, they're getting the shaft. The Northwest, statistically speaking, is still overall 95-96% white. That's according to the 2010 census in the 3.5 states with which we intend to operate. It is true that some states, like Washington, are now down to 89% white. But that's because of Seattle. These huge minority-heavy cities vote in a liberal Democrat state government, which in turn appoints liberal bureaucrats, so forth and so on. And so that's how you get this impression that the Northwest is liberal. Because our ruling elite is, yes, but the ordinary man on the street, the ordinary white people who live in the towns and the small cities and the rural areas are as sound as a bell. They are the people who are getting the shaft from the system. They are the people who are losing their jobs to Mexican immigration. They are the people who have had their houses foreclosed and suffered all of the things that white people have suffered all throughout the country. And when the time comes, if we can ever get our act together, they are the people who will support the creation of a Northwest homeland. This idea that the Northwest is super-duper liberal is like so many of the naysays that people come up with to say, oh, no, 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 we mustn't do this. It's always easy to find some excuse to do nothing. Us white boys are real good at that. We are top-notch at finding good, logical, rational excuses to do nothing, and we have to stop that. We need to stop looking at why we shouldn't come to the Northwest and look at why we should. And I will tell you this. I've been here 10 years now, and I honestly can't understand why any white person would want to live anywhere else. Coming here to the Pacific Northwest is going to be troublesome. It'll cause you expense and inconvenience, granted. But leaving all the racial politics aside, it's just plain a good idea. coming here, making your home, making your lives in the Pacific Northwest will be one of the best things that you ever do for you and your family. We are going to create a white homeland right here in the Northwest. So pack the van, make the move. We'll be waiting for you.
Okay, first thing I suppose I need to mention is that our friends in the silk suits have been sleazing around Seattle, asking questions about me. So let's run over that whole deal again. I'm sorry for the repetition, but these things happen every 6 months or so when they've got some budget to burn in the local bureau office, and they send their droids in the black SUVs out to do their Jack Bauer imitations on people's doorsteps. As you know, I have told you repeatedly how to deal with these people, which is to ask them if they have a warrant. And if they don't, then tell them to get one and physically close the door in their faces so they can't keep on trying to engage you in conversation from the hallway or from your porch. As with most of what I tell you people to do, I am usually ignored, which I have come to accept as part of my curse of Cassandra, the lady in Greek mythology who always prophesied true, but whom no one believed. Now, this is probably how it's going to be for the rest of my career, however long or short that may be. I will continue to tell you people what needs to be done and how to do it, and I will continue to be ignored, and people will continue to go to prison, and the movement will continue to go nowhere, but there's no accounting for the gods' sense of humor. So we'll move along. Anyway, one of the tactics the organs, as Solzhenitsyn calls them, use in this country to try and get you to not do what I keep telling you to do is to pretend that they just want to ask a few questions about some minor thing or other which you are clearly not involved in, and so you think, hey, what's the harm? And then once they're inside your home and sitting on your sofa or asking to go to the bathroom or finding other excuses to go poking around into things, all of a sudden the topic changes and they start asking you about whatever or whoever it is that they're really interested in. And then the terrified and paranoid emails start flying. They were here. They were here asking about so-and-so. They were here and your name was mentioned. And then everyone goes, yeah, my name was mentioned. No, no, Mr. Bill, anything but that. And everybody goes running around like a chicken with their head cut off in a kind of St. Vitus's dance of paranoia. Why was my name mentioned? What are they after? Are they going to kick in my door at 4 a.m. and shoot my dog and drag my children out of bed and stick guns in their faces while they drag me out of the house and that's the last time I'll ever see my home and my family? Probably not, because when they decide to do that, they don't go around knocking on other people's doors, dropping your name where they know it will get back to you. They simply do it, although in some cases they do like to play with you a bit like they did with Edgar Steele. What they're trying to do when they do the rounds like this is stir things up and get everybody all paranoid and frightened and confused so they are better targets for recruitment as informers. Now, a lot of this kind of stuff is just cruising for snitches. Anyone who will talk to them about anything at all whom they can develop into an informer, one of their $400 a week men. That's apparently the standard informer pay these days. $400 per week, tax-free, which works out to a little over $20,000 per year. Not a bad little sideline if, like most of these creeps, you can only barely earn minimum wage because you dicked off in school and didn't learn a marketable skill, like I tell you people not to do once again, and we'll get into that. Anyway, this is what they've been doing with me, cruising all over the country, dropping my name and seeing what comes up. Seeing if they can get a rise out of me, so forth and so on, which, okay, yeah, I suppose spending all this time on this subject on this podcast is getting a rise out of me, if you want to look at it like that. But I need to do my best to prep the rest of you guys to deal with this crap yourselves, even if you don't listen. There's always the chance that one or two of you will not ignore me and do as I say, and so I might save a life or two. At one stage, when I had a Facebook account under my own name, there were rousting people on my Facebook friends list, like that poor guy in Texas, whom I barely knew on the internet, and whom I've never met, but they came into his place about this time last year with all kinds of warrants and spent 2 days tearing his house apart and digging up his backyard, all of the time pestering him with questions about me and the NVA. And last spring sometime, I think it was, the Joint Terrorism Task Force was cruising around Portland wanting to know where they could find the NVA. Their words, not mine. You see, apparently, There is some moron somewhere in the bowels of the J. Edgar Hoover building in D.C. who is convinced that the NVA exists and that I am hiding it out in the vast, trackless depths of the primeval Northwest forest. And we're just waiting to do something that will mess up Hillary's impending coronation in 2016 or something to that effect. No, really, I'm not making that up. I honestly don't know whether there's anybody in authority in the Bureau who is really that fucking stupid that they don't know the difference between fiction and reality, or else more likely they've decided that if there is no NVA, then there should be, which is something we finally agree on. And the ridiculously misnamed Justice Department has decided to fabricate one. Now, you remember how Combat 18 came into being in the UK? I've told you that Grandpa Simpson story before. A communist Jew named Jerry Gable made it up. Anyway, at the risk of boring some of our older, regular listeners with a repetition, let me get into the topic again here. This is important. You guys need to internalize this and, who knows, maybe even give a little consideration to really listening to me and doing what I say here, because these creatures are dangerous human predators and they can do terrible harm to you and your family. I know sometimes I sound a bit glib and dismissive when I talk about the organs, and maybe I shouldn't. But make no mistake, dealing with these people is like handling a cobra. One bite, as an afterthought, can make you die in agony. Any encounter at all is deadly dangerous, and that's one reason why every contact with them needs to be kept to an absolute minimum length of time, and why you must not feed them with information or tantalize them into thinking they can get information from you, because they'll never leave you alone after that. Information is what they use to do the terrible evil that they inflict on the world.
Whatever you say, say nothing. When you talk about it, you know what. For if you know who should hear, you know what you'll get. They'll take you out to you know where. You wouldn't know how long. So for you know who's sake, don't let anyone hear you sing it. Sing it all. And whatever you say, say nothing. When you talk about it, you know what. For if you know who should hear.
I've been ad-libbing up until now, but what I'm going to do at this point is to read to you a few pertinent excerpts from the new 5th edition of the Party Manual. This is how you need to deal with the problem of police and FBI harassment. Based on my 40 years of experience, in which I have only been arrested 3 times, and I have never spent a single night in a jail cell, so my method works. If you choose to ignore it and let your alligator mouth get your parakeet ass in trouble, then there's not a damn thing I can do about it. That seems to be who we are. But I'll never stop trying. Anyway, here goes. From the 5th edition of the Northwest Front Party Manual. What you have to understand about our lords and masters in federal law enforcement, and indeed anyone who works in any federal or state government department, is that in bureaucratic circles, it's all about budget. Your department's cut of the taxpayer pie. The bigger it is, the more important your boss man is within the pecking order, and the more prestige your department has. Anti-terrorism is now a multi-billion dollar business in America and most countries throughout the world. There are agencies employing tens of thousands of people who want to make sure that flood of wealth and power keeps on flowing into their pockets. And if there are no terrorists to stop with all those billions of dollars, if someone in the regime realizes that they are wasting immense amount of time and money every year on what is, at the present time, little more than wild paranoia, then obviously that can't be allowed lest the flow of dollars and goodies slow down to a trickle. Burn this into your brain. Without terrorists, there cannot be anti-terrorists. You now have the explanation for so much that has been going on over the past generation. It is to everyone's benefit that terrorists be occasionally run to earth and caught, and put on display by the various agencies, except for the poor dumb bastards who are framed, of course, and they don't count since they're nobodies. Apu from the Quickie Mart, or some dumb old white boy who is too stupid to realize that Barack Hussein Obama is the one, bow down and apply his lips in the prescribed manner. A lot of what the FBI and BATFE and DHS and Secret Service and NSA and CIA do is make work designed solely to spend money and justify their existence. Even better, to justify their existence at the expense of all the other agencies in the federal alphabet soup. Above all, they need to justify their immense budgets to the bean counters back in Washington, D.C. Whoever gets the big budget has to spend that money, or it looks bad. If you're thrifty and you actually save the government money by bringing your department in under budget, then what they'll do is cut your allocation for the next fiscal year, and that's no way for an FBI career man to build an empire. Some years ago, a former FBI agent published his memoirs, and he described how on a slow day his SAIC, special agent in charge, would walk through the office yelling at people, "Why aren't you people out in the field catching bad guys? Come on, boys and girls, we've still got $200,000 worth of budget this office has to burn before July the 1st. Hit the road, burn some rubber, stay in some motels, and let me see some expense vouchers." Now, this essentially is what happened to Randy Weaver in 1992. The ATF spent a lot of money and effort trying to flip Randy as an informer against the Aryan Nations. Rather than taking no for an answer, some special agent got pissed off at the stroppy white boy who wouldn't do as he was told by his betters and started harassing Randy, trying to coerce him into ratting. This included such monkey shines as rigging up fiber optic cameras in the trees around Weaver's cabin to spy on him with his daughter Sarah, and framing Weaver on a sawed-off shotgun charge to bring him into the system, quote-unquote, and get a legal handle on him, which the Federals now admit that they did, rare for them. All the while, this special agent in charge was spending budget money on Randy Weaver and building up a file with no court case and no conviction. And finally, he was told by Washington that he had spent too much money and he damn well better come up with a conviction for something, which led to the attack on Weaver's home and the murder of his wife and son. Sam and Vicky Weaver died for some ATF agents, bottom line. Federal agents spend a large part of their time and budget attempting to build up networks of potential informants. Retired FBI agent Bud Romer wrote in his memoirs that an agent is only as good as his informants, and this official attitude hasn't changed. The jewels in an FBI man's crown are his string of snitches. They begin this process by finding people who will talk to them at all about anything. Sports, weather, politics, doesn't matter, because that leads to other stuff. When the secret police show up at your door for the first time, they're scoping you out as a potential snitch simply by asking you a few innocuous questions about nothing in particular and feeling your vibes. Your answers to those questions are not so important in themselves as the fact that you answer them at all, if you do. And if you do, the first time they leave, they will mark you down in their little notebook in their files as a potential source, as someone who will talk to them. And that's what you don't want. Because once you establish that you will talk to them about anything, then they're going to keep coming back looking for more and more information about more and more people. They especially love to locate smart-ass right-winger types who want to show off how clever they are and how much they know about the Constitution and the law, and who will run their mouths to prove that point, which of course they aren't. Smart, that is. In the first place, the Constitution is irrelevant and has been irrelevant since 1861, when Abraham Lincoln, the first imperial president, called for 100,000 troops to use armed force against other Americans to force them to obey him. In the second place, among other things, federal agents are trained intelligence analysts. As long as the noise is coming out of your mouth, they will find some way to extract information from it, and they will use that information to destroy human lives, including your own. When federal agents come to your door and say that they want to ask you questions, the very first words out of your mouth must be, "Do you have a warrant?" If they try to bluster or BS you off the subject, repeat the question, "Do you have a warrant?" Do not allow them to evade that question. Say nothing else until they answer the question, and above all, do not let them in voluntarily, not to go to the bathroom or get a drink of water or use the phone or anything like that, because once they are inside, they will find some way to wander all over your home sneaking and peeking. If the agents do have a warrant, most likely they won't be knocking on the door anyway. They'll be kicking it in around dawn, screaming threats at you and throwing you to the floor and sticking automatic weapons in your back, or more likely hiding behind the local police SWAT team while they do it. If they don't have a warrant, then you simply say, "Come back when you get one," and immediately close the door. That's important. Close the door. Don't stand there with it open waiting for them to go away. They won't go away. They'll try to engage you in further conversation and persuade you to invite them in so that they can sneak and peek. Do not give them any opportunity to say anything else. Once you have told them to come back with a warrant, close the door. If they force their way into your home without a warrant, which they can now legally do under the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act of 2006, then is when the five words kick in. I have nothing to say. Do not try to bandy words or debate with them or show them how clever you are about the law and the Constitution. The FBI and the DHS know all about the Constitution. They simply choose to ignore it because they can and because they know that there will be no negative consequences for them if they do. Don't try to tell them that you have rights. Out here in the real world, you are a racially aware white man, and so no, you don't. They may try to verbally provoke you into assaulting them so that they can arrest you and have a charge to hold over your head. Don't fall for it. Answer every question with either, "I want an attorney," or "I have nothing to say." Then, when your attorney arrives, you still have nothing to say. Remember, these people have one purpose only, and that is to do you harm. Human beings and human lives are the fuel, the fodder, the raw material on which an FBI agent or other federal investigator builds his career. His achievement is measured in years of prison time that other people have to serve, not him. So he really goes after those years, looking to pile them on to anyone he can so his record shines in Washington. A federal agent is not your friend. Never. Not under any circumstances. They are not interested in you. They are not interested in your life or your problems. They are not interested in you as a person at all. To them, you and your family are either targets to be destroyed or stepping stones they can use to build their careers and land that plush job at headquarters in Washington, D.C., or maybe in the Honolulu field office. When the secret police show up on your doorstep, they are there for one reason only, to do harm, either to you or someone else. You must never forget this, because if you do, you will pay for it in many, many years of living hell. All it takes is a few words coming out of your mouth to destroy your life and the lives of countless other people forever. The only way to avoid that is to make sure that only five words ever come out of your mouth. I have nothing to say. But our time is up for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 2188, Bremerton, Washington 98310. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sarsha Andaban. Freedom. Beating heart.